This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornbergen. Coming up in the second half of today's show, Director of Radio Bill Thomas joins me to talk about the recent Governor's Awards for the Arts, and featuring John Gross, who was honored as a cultural treasure for the state of North Dakota. But first, we are going to start actually with a different art theme. So you have heard of the concept of a sabbatical. This happens a lot on academic properties where a professor is allowed to take a year away from work, do some research, maybe write a book, have some time to let the teaching responsibilities go so that they can reconnect in a meaningful way with the work that they do. And our guest today said, well, that is a very good idea, and I think that would work quite well for artists. So in studio with me in Fargo is Brandon LaPlante, and he is one of the co-founders of the Tired Artists Fellowship. Thanks for joining us today, Brandon.
Thank you very much, Ashley, and happy to be here.
And joining me in Bismarck is Britta Anderson. She is the other co-founder of the Tired Artists Fellowship. Britta, thank you for joining me today.
Of course, thank you.
And as you might guess, they are both longtime established artists in the state of North Dakota and region-wide as well. And also in our Bismarck studio is David Borlaug. He is the director of the Capitol Gallery, which is the fiscal host for this first year of the fellowship. David, thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
So, Brandon, I'll start with you. Where did this idea come from?
Britta and I's friendship was formed around our mutual love of art and appreciation for each other's work. So naturally, we spent many a long conversation talking about our, you know, dreams and ideas of the future projects that we wanted to create and the struggles that we both face being artists in this world and the obstacles that we see day in and day out for ourselves as well as the other artists that we know and talk to. So I guess we had a lot of time to also spitball and brainstorm new innovative ideas on how to potentially solve those problems for both us and other artists. And that is where the Tired Artists Fellowship was born.
What would something like a fellowship mean? How would this program work?
Well, it would be where we raise money and we give that money to artists specifically to spend a year concentrating specifically on their creative explorations and expression through their mm-hmm. process, kind of separate from all the obstacles of external life that kind of help promote the tired artist mentality.
Right, you know? When you've got that right brain and left brain thing going on and you just, one is real taxing.
Yeah, so yeah. It's kind of freeing artists up sure. to concentrate on their creativity.
So Britta, who is eligible for this program?
So that's the fun part on like our behalf is that there is no fee or like application process in this type of fellowship. That's the kind of part we wanted to eliminate and give artists the freedom to be open to. And instead, we are actually the curators of this. We scout for the artists that we know have a credible accountability and a really strong performance in the community, as well as, you know, and if they're in the university system, if they're just self-employed artists, emerging, all different types of levels.
Yeah. How do you think that a year like this would impact you?
I mean, if I've given this opportunity, which I hope for one day, it gives you the opportunity to just solely focus on that research portion. Not a lot of people, you know, if they don't have a background in arts per se or don't negotiate with artists on the daily basis, there's a lot of intense research that goes behind art craft. Whether it's what has, you know, formed the artistic ability or just inspired, either way. But having that year to just solely focus, work on yourself, work on your craft, work within the community, be inspired by other things that maybe you're not necessarily exposed to, without, like Brandon said, any of those external roadblocks, whether that's, you know, your 9-to-5, maybe there could be a financial situation in there since we are giving you the opportunity to do so. But I don't know, just feel like it would be very beneficial for any artist that, you know, is looking at residencies or looking at grants to be given an opportunity.
Well, let's address that, what you called the financial situation. Mm-hmm. You are looking to raise a total of $100,000 in order to give people $50,000 each. Am I getting that correct? Two different artists on sabbatical?
Yes. So it's starting with like the pilot program. We are hoping to start with us, or at least one of us, in order to really get down to the nitty-gritty of what's working, what's not working, how can we sustain another artist or a few other artists on this platform. We need to be able to take control and kind of, you know, firsthand be the guinea pigs for this. But for the financial reasons, yes, we're asking for like, we're shooting for, I should not say asking, we're shooting for 100 to 150 for within a year or for at least our first go at this. Through a variety of different ways. And that will help us save a little bit so we can take an artist out on a sabbatical and then have that turnover for the following year. So kind of just depends on how things go. Since this is such a fresh startup, we're really going all four force on that. So you know, with high hopes, but we're just really passionate about the arts in our community and in the Midwest. So we believe people feel the same way.
So how do people make donations, Brandon?
Well, right now we have been concentrating on direct involvement with people that we know and people that we're having conversations with, and they would be able to donate the money to the Capital Gallery Society by talking with David, and they can directly give a check to him or put it through one of their accounts that way, and that's currently what we're doing. We are planning on opening it up to doing other options of fundraising and like crowdfunding potentially with a GoFundMe and other options. So David might actually have some good information on that.
David, why did the Capitol Gallery want to act as fiscal host?
Well, first, it's a perfect fit with our mission. As you know, our previous life, we're a nonprofit, and for nearly 20 years, we operated the Lewis and Clark Center in Fort Mandan at Washburn, and in that process became immersed in the world of art. And then we made a major change 5 years ago now, where it became a state park at Washburn by design. It was always owned by the state of North Dakota. A lot of people didn't realize it. But we made that change and then changed our mission, moved to Bismarck, and opened a fine art gallery.
And, a little different.
You know, kind of the same, only different. To be honest, you know, there's a million-dollar art collection at the Interpretive Center in Washburn, now owned by the people of North Dakota, thanks to our work. Carl Bodmer, George Catlin, and then many contemporary artists as well. So it's a continuation of how we immersed ourselves with art in our previous life as cultural and historical interpretation. Well, now it's a pure play. It's all about art and culture. And really what we're doing for these two co-founders is how we started out. I realized last night thinking about this, I'm 63 years old, and I was in my 30s when I embarked upon what became our foundation. It's been half of my life. And we started out using our County Historical Society as the fiscal agent for 2 or 3 years before in 1995 we established ourselves as a 501c3. So we'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary next year as a nonprofit, as a bona fide 501c3. And I know that can take time, and it's good, you know, to give an entity like this some scaffolding under itself until you get to that point, because the catch-22 is to be a 501c3, you also need a track record. And so we can be the enabler, the facilitator, to take the generosity of people who believe in this and want to make it happen, and it just flows through us. We're simply a pass-through. And then in due course, you know, Brandon and Britta can determine, okay, we're ready to take that leap and become a 501c3, or this process could continue for a period of time. you know, it's all very fluid, as both Britta and Brandon have made clear from the outset, that feeling their way through it. But I can say, as someone who's been doing fundraising for half my life, that the early response they're getting from people is very genuine and very encouraging. So as a nonprofit, and a nonprofit with a mission statement of celebrating history, art, and culture, we're excited about it.
We're visiting with artists and co-founders of the Tired Artists Fellowship, Brandon LaPlante and Britta Anderson, and David Borlaug, director of the Capitol Gallery. And Brandon and Britta, as artists, I'm sure that you have been asked a lot of times, what is your art and what is your process? I'm going to try to do this a little differently.
Okay.
Anyway, Brandon, describe Britta's art.
Ooh, this is another approach.
I like this.
You've been doing your homework.
Except Britta's got a little lead time to think about.
Oh, yes. Perfect.
She does. How would I describe Britta's art? I admire Britta's work on a very high level. I think she is quite a visionary in the art world. And I'm very happy to be founding something like this with her, because she does amazing stormscapes, water skyscapes with classical oil painting techniques that are very intriguing and entrancing. They seem to pull people in when they're looking at them, almost like they have movement to them. And not just like movement in the piece, but a lot of people have expressed while looking at the pieces while I'm around them, saying that they actually feel like the water is moving. And that's one of the things that I really love. But not only that, she does such interesting things with the world of abstract and installation work and sculpture, and adding very industrial materials into her medium, like concrete and asphalt and all sorts of different creations of her canvases. And it's just so, so wonderful.
Well, Britta, aww, you should see Brandon's eyes.
Oh, it's a lot. Brandon, you want to write my next artist statement, please?
I will take that on.
All right, Britta, I'll toss you under the bus. How do you describe Brandon's?
Perfect. No, those are lovely words. Thank you. Oh, let's see. How to start even with Brandon here? He's like a wizard of all sorts of weird traits. From right down from like the traditional figure drawing all the way up to the unconventional ways of working with random materials that he finds and or incorporates or reuses. It's actually just really magical. I mean, I met Brandon when he was doing a lot of his functional work that's like sculptures, furniture. I've been able to see a few drawings here and there, but I was really, really drawn to the way that he was able to manipulate objects with his hands. I'm a very tactile person, and he uses pretty much even more than I do with the materials of like concrete, stone, steel, glass, wood, and he contrasts that all together to create such a diverse range of themes with just one simple sculpture or structure. And even like, it's hard to talk about because you just want to see the images so badly. They're so beautiful. And Brandon, I hope I'm doing you justice here.
Very much so. Thank you very much.
It's just, he's a very eclectic man between, you know, whether it's being a visual artist, a maker, a sculptor, or even a musician. You can see all of the artistic functions that he produces in each one of his art forms. And that's what I've admired for all of these years that Brandon has, you know, been working. I've seen him in the studio, I've seen him in the workshop, and I've seen him in my garage helping me pull apart weird things of concrete and rocks and absurdity. But no, he's a fantastic artist to have in the art world.
Well, you both talked so lovingly about that art. We do want to give people a chance to come and check some of that out. So you can go to BrittaAnderson.com, and that's Anderson with an O-N. And you can follow Brandon on Instagram. It's Brandon.LaPlante, and that's L-A-P-L-A-N-T-E. You can stay on top of what's happening at the Capitol Gallery at thecapitolgallery.com, and you can learn all about the fellowship program for establishing the sabbatical for the tired artists. And the easiest way to do that is to Google medium.com and the tired artists, and you'll get right near that page. And from there, you can make a donation as well. Brandon, how hard was it to refer to yourself as an artist?
That is a really good question. I spent a very long time wrestling and struggling with that in my teens and 20s. And now it's a different thing. It's kind of an evolved identity, I guess. I struggled with it a lot because when I originally was a creative person with music and art and sculpture, it was really my own. It had nothing to do with external consumers or viewers. It was all about just the joy of being creative. And when I got a little older and started going to school and going to classes for it, the mentality of why behind it kind of changed when it came to learning the skills of how to use each different medium and technique. And then it became more about the end product and like the place where it was going to be. And then I went to college, and it really kind of made me realize the humility of where I was at as an artist. So I didn't want to emblazon myself as a titled artist because I didn't really think that I had the skill or the body of work, you know, that was a necessity to be that. And I didn't have the experience and having my stuff in shows. And over the years, I have gained a lot more experience, done a lot more travel, done a lot more work. And in my mid-20s, I kind of just accepted the fact that I am an artist and I will always be an artist. And it's no longer such a heavy title to carry for me.
Britta, was it a struggle for you?
I think it's a struggle for any person that claims to be an artist, or let alone a creative. So, I mean, Brennan's got some years on me a little bit, so he's been through a little bit more than I have in some sense. We both took very drastic, you know, different approaches to getting to where we are today. I remember, like, straight out of, you know, not straight up, going into university, I guess, I wanted to be an architect so badly. I wanted to work with those materials. I wanted to design stuff. I love to draw. I love to do all those things. So I was like, yeah, let's try that route. But soon realized that I'm just not linear enough to hold down the very precise everything that it takes to be that. So I was like, well, I like to work with these materials. So let's just give, you know, painting and creating a whirl. And I, you know, kind of stuck with it. I was doing it. I was drawing on my parents' basement floor forever, getting in trouble. So kind of knew that rebellious side of me. I was supposed to be something in the creative world. It wasn't until, like, honestly, after undergraduate, when I got my bachelor's in fine arts along with art education, that this was for sure the route I wanted to take. I wanted to do anything I could to make it possible that I could be an artist, whether that meant, like, stable enough to be it full time or just have the luxury of being able to do it on the side and provide people, like, what I can do, my craft, and also advocate for those other artists in my world. So, yeah, I went to grad school, did the whole master's thing, cried a little bit, laughed a little bit, got angry a little bit, survived though, so that was good. And now I'm here, and I just know my role as an artist is not just to create art, but also to advocate for it.
David, how can galleries advocate for artists?
Well, that's why this is such a perfect fit, because we do that, obviously, by selling art. We're a retail art gallery, but especially through our nonprofit status, we also show art as a museum. So we're an amalgamation, a blend. but we are a strong advocate for the artists that we represent, and up to 20 or 30 of them now. And, you know, it's things like sold a beautiful piece of Britta's a week ago at 10:30 at night, lying in bed texting. you know, it's kind of how I operate. But we are a strong advocate for artists and the art community, and we do that on a very regional basis. I mean, our you know, canvas, pun intended, prior was national with our historical work with Lewis and Clark and so forth, and it still is. And we're attracting great artists from all across the region, not just North Dakota, Minnesota, and so forth. And so it is an advocacy role that we play. And that doesn't necessarily mean always selling their art, but revealing their art to people. We had a gallery in Medora all summer. Well, 99 out of 100 people don't buy anything. But for many of them, it was their first time in a bona fide art gallery. Mm-hmm. And we'll have some exciting news to share very soon that we're going to have a presence in downtown Fargo as well. So we're all over the place, but it's all about revealing the joy of art, the joy of owning original art to as big an audience as we can.
Well, David, we'll have you back on when you do make the official Fargo announcement.
We'll break it right here.
Brandon, as an artist, what is a question that you are just really tired of getting asked? And what do you wish people would ask you instead?
Oh, wow. That is a... Yeah.
How long does it take?
Yeah. How long? How long does it take?
2.5 more minutes on this interview.
Yeah. That's one of them. The two that I would be the most tired about is how long does it take and what does it mean? Those are the ones that I am the most tired of. And I think a lot of people might be confused and not understand why. Those are such frustrating questions to artists, but it's one of the reasons why artists are so tired is because it takes so much of us to be tuned in to creativity and then to have the skill and the energy to create and then put our out into the world. And then when, you know, that conversation between the viewer and the art comes, then having to also explain and teach about what it's about rather than the person having their own personal dialogue and understanding of it, what it makes them feel. That's more about what I would like to do and have an art or someone who looked at my art ask me a question like, oh man, that is hard. I don't know. I just don't know what I would want to be asked about my art. Britta, do you have anything that you think would be a good question for people to ask?
Thanks for doing my job for me.
Oh, goodness.
We've learned to tell people as abstract, what does that mean? What's it supposed to say? And the answer is, what do you think it means?
Right.
What does it say to you?
Yeah.
That's breaking the code.
Yeah. I mean, I get that question a lot, being like, what does it mean? And I have some very basic line representational. It's right in front of you. But all I can say is, well, can you put yourself into that painting and create a story for me? I mean... And then we have a conversation off of there. That's usually what I've learned to say instead of my own experience with my work, because I know my own experience, but I'm still striving to see what other people are feeling necessarily to kind of poke back the question at them. So you don't just, you know, give them the answer. You want to make them conversate a little bit and not just shut it down.
So, Britta Anderson is one of the co-founders of the Tired Artists Fellowship, a sabbatical program for established artists. Britta, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Brandon LaPlante is the other co-founder of the Tired Artists. Brandon, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And David Borlaug is the director of the Capitol Gallery, which is acting as the fiscal host for the fellowship. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
You can find out more at brittaanderson.com, thecapitalgallery.com. You can follow Brandon on Instagram at brandon.laplante. And you can read all about the fellowship and make a donation by searching medium.com and The Tired Artists. Still to come on Main Street, Bill Thomas joins us with highlights from the Governor's Award for the Arts. But first, this news.
From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald. Concerns are mounting as North Dakota receives more snow on top of what is already saturated soil. Greg Gust is the warning coordination meteorologist with the Grand Forks National Weather Service. Gust says the first probabilistic flood models will be released later this week. He says looking at current conditions, the potential is there to see a spring flood season ranking in the top five. He says even with projections being developed, there are a number of questions that will need answering.
So now what is the winter snowpack going to be? How is it going to come off in the spring? All of that is still to be determined, but we're in a good start for snow, and I see it snowing now, and more is on the way. So there we go. Stay tuned.
For Cass County Commissioner Mary Sherling, the message would be start preparing.
My understanding is there's about 10 new people that move into Cass County every single day that have never experienced a flood and have no idea what this community and this county goes through in preparation and anticipation of that. And I don't want to be an alarmist, but you should be ready. Right now, people should be making sure if they need flood insurance that they've got it.
Officials say the heightened river flows will not be limited to the Red River. The Cheyenne, the James River, and the Missouri River could possibly see major flooding this spring. The retired head of the North Dakota Army and Air National Guard is speaking out about the killing of Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian major general killed in a U.S. airstrike this month. Mike Haugen says Soleimani, commander of a division responsible for clandestine military operations that resulted in the death of at least four North Dakota National Guard soldiers in the Middle East.
2019 was an all-time record year, which broke our...
I thought, you know, this is not revenge. This is justice. This guy killed North Dakota soldiers, people from right here, people that I knew, and they're good. They were good guys, lots of them.
Haugen says information provided by the U.S. Army determined the improvised explosive devices that took the lives of those North Dakota soldiers was traced to Soleimani's terrorist activities. And a record year for business at Fargo's Hector International Airport.
2019 was an all-time record year, which broke our record that was set back in 2014. So we had 471,333 in planned revenue passengers, which was an all-time record. That's 11.6% increase over 2018.
Airport Executive Director Sean Doberstein says in December alone, there were more than 46,000 boardings, an all-time monthly record for the airport. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg in studio with Bill Thomas. He is the director of radio here at Prairie Public and a big supporter of the arts. And boy, anytime there's a good arts story to cover, none of the rest of us even get a chance. No, I'm kidding, Bill. We love the arts coverage that you provide here. And we are going to learn about a cultural treasure.
Yeah.
To the state of North Dakota. This happened recently at the Governor's Awards for the Arts. So just a quick setup for anyone who isn't familiar. What are these awards?
Every other year, they do the Governor's Awards for the Arts. It's in conjunction with the North Dakota Council on the Arts. And anybody could be nominated. So you could be a cultural treasure. I could be a cultural treasure if somebody nominates us, and then the Arts Council vets it and approves it, and then it goes to the governor to make the final selection. So the final awards come from the governor, but it's in collaboration with the North Dakota Council on the Arts.
Okay. And so probably fair to say this is they take a look at longtime artists who work within their communities, or do they not really have
they base it on you know your accomplishment. I mean, mm-hmm. you could have some really big accomplishment and be young, or you could have a lifetime of accomplishment that you're being honored for. They look for connection with the community. They look for the artistic value of the things that you work on. And the North Dakota Council on the Arts, of course, has a wide, broad definition of the arts that includes the folk and traditional arts and mm-hmm. public art, and they always try to give an award for arts and education. So they have a variety of things that they look mm-hmm. at.
Well, and typically an event like this is sort of celebrating why the arts are important. Like, yes, this person is a good painter, but what does that mean to be part of a community, and how can arts impact just our quality of life?
Right, and they honor an arts organization. Mm-hmm. So the Jamestown Fine Arts Art Association, which is mostly known as the Arts Center in Jamestown. They got honored this year.
They
the
do
Arts
a
Partnership
lot of cool
was
stuff.
In the previous one. And yeah, oh, yeah, they, that Jamestown group is very active. They usually honor a business for supporting and appreciating the arts. So the Office Sign Company of Fargo got honored this year as a business. So they offer some kind of recognition to – it's not just like a painter or a musician, but it's a whole range of involvement with the arts.
Okay. And we have a gentleman, John Groth, who is called – what was it? A cultural treasure to the
yes.
state of North Dakota. First of all, I just love that whole idea, a cultural treasure. So set us up. Who's John Groth?
So John Groth is – well, we'll get a good intro to him, actually.
Okay.
So I don't want to repeat everything that's going to be said. He's from Napoleon, and he is somebody – he's being honored primarily for his work in German traditional music as part of the Germans from Russia community here. But he's been involved in a lot of things. So he's been an oral history resource. I know you did some work with the folk and traditional anthology that was put together by the Council on the Arts that had stories.
Yeah, Sundogs and Sunflowers.
Yeah, from him in it. And so he, that's when they honor someone as a cultural treasure, and this is a tradition I think that's been adopted from other societies – the idea is this whole person in their whole life and all the things they do embodies are an aspect of culture or a culture that we want to treasure and appreciate.
Okay.
So they brought in to introduce him a man from the National Endowment for the Arts. His name is Clifford Murphy. He's the director of folk and traditional arts there, and he came out to Bismarck to introduce John Groth.
John Groth was born in 1924 on a farm in south central North Dakota. He learned to sing and play German-Russian music from his father, who played organ at church. Over the years, John learned to play the organ, harmonica, accordion, omnichord, guitar, and many other instruments. He also learned to sing and play more than 100 German songs. A World War II veteran, John returned from war to marry his sweetheart, Margaret Schaefer, and they raised their family on a farm south of Napoleon. Together, they joined the Young German Singers in the 1980s. In addition to performing for more than 35 years, John has worked to preserve German-Russian music as a master to several apprentices through the North Dakota Council on the Arts, sharing his knowledge and love of music. John has also expanded the art of German-Russian music to new audiences through public performances, radio, and televised events. A traditional German-Russian folk singer, John has nurtured and kept alive the ancient folk songs and music of his forebears, most importantly, Kutschorgen, the Black Sea German dialect of his parents, grandparents, and pioneering ancestors. Today, John and Margaret, his wife of over 71 years, today, John and Margaret live in Napoleon, North Dakota. He still sings and plays when he can. John is a devoted husband, father, grandfather, farmer, educator, and artist.
So that's the introduction to John Groth, and then he worked with a group that they call the Fifth Dementia, and they played some songs. Unfortunately, just because the way the sound was, it didn't come out well as a recording, but fortunately, we have a recording that John Groth made when he was just a young fellow in his 80s working with Prairie Public. So we're going to hear a couple of songs. This first one, he's accompanied by organ, and he introduces it.
Morgan Road. It's also a war song. Morgan Road means sunrise. When the sun comes up, the trumpets will blow, and I will lose my life and many more of my buddies. Morgan Road, Morgan Road.
Leicht hat mir zum freien Tod, bald wird die Trompete blasen.
So that's one sample, and he did a couple at the Arts Awards. So here's another sample, which he also introduces.
Alte Schnapsenbalzer, the old whiskey balzer. Oh, I'd love so pleasantly to drink with old balzer, and then dance on a good wooden floor, and then fall asleep in a bed under a warm blanket. Der alte Schnapsenbalzer. Oh, ich in der alte Schnapsenbalzer wird jeden so gern eins trinken. Oh, ich in der alte Schnapsenbalzer wird jeden so gern eins trinken. Auf ein Schnapsbot Elien saufen, wenn wir wollen. Heiße, heiße Hopsa, sabi, uns geht's lustig zu.
Love him.
John Gross, honored as a cultural treasure. Now, after he and the Fifth Dementia sang, then Governor Bergen came up to actually give him the award, and he responds.
It's my distinct honor to give our second award for this evening to our North Dakota's very own cultural treasure, John Gross.
What the honor it is for me to meet the governor. In my life, I didn't think that would ever happen, even though I'm over 90, but some things happen sometimes.
To John and the Fifth Dementia, I want to say a special thank you for all being here tonight and for that amazing performance. John mentioned that he had been married 71 years. At his 70th wedding anniversary, someone asked him, what's the secret to a long marriage? And he said, well, first, you got to live a long time. But he's done that, 94 years old, and here performing today. That's got to be an inspiration for any artist. If you're 44 or under, you could practice for 50 years, and you might master that instrument. But let's give it up for John in the Fifth Dementia. That was fantastic.
Okay, so two things right away. Uh-huh. His accent, I mean, he sounds like what you would say, you know, he's from the old country, but... I mean, he was born here. He just is.
That's how they talk in Napoleon sometimes.
Wow, it's beautiful. And then that thank you, that acceptance speech. Could he be more humble? Honestly, that was so, I just, you know, usually you expect, yes, thank you. And even maybe, and I worked hard for this and I appreciate that. But he just was happy to get honored. Yeah.
No, it was great. And we heard quite a variety of acceptance speeches at the Governor's Arts Awards. And you know, some were just a lot of thank yous. And Dave Borlaug got up and he was honored for his work with art galleries and so on. And he made a pretty short one. He said, like, I'm just going to be modest by keeping this short because that's the only way I can do it. So, so it was great. Another person who was honored that did make an interesting acceptance speech that we can play for you today is Annette Hovey.
Okay.
She is a music educator, and she's from the New Rockford Cheyenne District. And David White Thunder Trottier, who's the chair of the North Dakota Council on the Arts, did the introduction to her, and he talked about, you know, all the activities she does and how she works so hard with her choir groups and how she ties things in together, and she's worked with the students in different ways to have them learn as is said in another Prairie Public production, more than just the music, teamwork, and the value of arts. So moving to Annette Hovey, honored as an arts educator at the Governor's Award for the Arts, let's hear just a little bit from David White Thunder Trotier's intro.
Throughout her career, she has worked hard to highlight the importance of music education, the health benefits of creating art, and the wonderful learning that is taking place in our small schools around North Dakota.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing with her because she's not just art for art's sake. And I think that's part of what made people interested in what she is doing. She really works with her students on all the benefits and things that come out of arts. And so she made an interesting talk in acceptance of the award as well. Here's Annette Hovey.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Governor Bergen. Where do I start? I'm still, to this minute, so unbelievably flabbergasted, but incredibly honored that I'm receiving this very prestigious award. Me, never would have thought that that I would be receiving a Governor's Award for the Arts and Education. Thank you to everyone who had a hand in this. I have to start by telling you that I was informed I would be receiving this award as I was attending our annual State American Choral Directors Association conference. My first thought after I got off the phone with Kim was, why me? I was surrounded by so many passionate, talented, and hardworking teachers and professionals that I couldn't fathom why I was singled out among them. But I continued to ponder on this. And if you're a Christian as I am, a verse that recently came up in a reading of the Bible that I did lately from Jeremiah that says, "For I know well the plans I have in mind for you." I truly believe that God's plan has brought me here tonight. While God is not about awards and honors, he is about pushing us out of our comfort zones and using the gifts he has given us. He's given me a really couple big pushes this year. I'm ever so grateful to God that he gave me the gifts of performing and teaching music. What a joyful way I get to live life. And I'm not sure where life is going after this with these pushes, but I'm trying to listen to his voice. Now I have to say a few thank yous. First of all, I have to thank Robin Reynolds for nominating me. I've never met her till tonight. And that to me, it was just amazing that she would nominate me. Thank you, Governor Bergen, for conferring this honor on me. As my high school kids would say, mind blown. Thank you to the North Dakota Council on the Arts for all your hard work promoting and supporting all that is good in our North Dakota arts community. Thank you to the community of New Rockford and Cheyenne and beyond and all the friends we have made and who welcomed my husband and I 8 years ago. We feel so blessed to live in a caring, supportive community. It has been the best move for us, and we look forward to a continued beautiful life on the banks of the James River. I do have to thank the administration and school board of New Rockford Cheyenne School for their unequivocal support of our music program, most especially my superintendent, Jill Louders, who is here tonight, who has shown our school and our community the importance of arts education. I will be forever grateful for all the affirmations I have received from her and from our other administrators as our program has grown. And I thank the hardworking team of teachers at New Rockford Cheyenne, several of who are here tonight, and the paras and the staff. They are a joy to work beside and keep me smiling, even on the bad days. Heather Klucky, who is also here tonight, is a friend and a colleague. And as a music partner at school, she is hands down the best. Her tireless work in her elementary music classroom sends confident, creative, and knowledgeable kids my way, and I thank her. I can't forget my beautiful family who are here tonight. I come from a very large family. They're not all here. And I don't have time, obviously, to mention all of them, but I know that they are here by my side, even though they aren't here in the room. My mom is here, Jane Dufo. Can we ever thank our moms enough? From piano to dance to flute lessons to many, many, many concerts, her and my dad were always there for me, and they nurtured this musical growth, musical talent in me as soon as they saw it. I know my dad is also here watching down. I have to say thank you to my husband, Jim, who didn't know what he was getting into 30 plus years ago, marrying a music person. What a ride it's been, and I know in my heart that I wouldn't be where I am today without his friendship, his love, his sense of humor, and his support. To my four beautiful children, who have embraced the joy of music in one way or another and share their talents every day, I love you and appreciate who you are and the confident, loving adults that you are have become. I also want to acknowledge other mentors who played a large role in my life and my career, from school music teachers, piano teachers, UND professors, and previous colleagues. I've learned so much along the way, and I wouldn't be where I am here today without them. I do have to close by saying that as a music teacher, I enter my classroom every day, intent on leading each of my students toward the goal of creating beautiful music. Doesn't always happen. I don't do my job for awards. I do my job for my kids, for their brain, for their health, and for joy in life. There are good days and bad days, days I don't think I can do it, days I feel like a failure as a teacher. But I push forward, and the good days make it all worth it. My heart sings when I know I have instilled in my students the joy of music, the desire for high-quality performance, and the knowledge that each person who enters my room is important, is a musician, and is loved. Thank you again for this incredible honor. I will work every day for the rest of my life promoting music and the arts. They are necessary, they are important, and they bring joy to life. Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, we could have just clipped out some highlights, but we left in all the thank yous and everything because one of the things that I think is distinctive, you know, the different arts are different, and music educators who work in our school systems have such a strong orientation toward groups and teams and the process of working together, different parts, you know, combining. It's not all the same, so it's just interesting to me how I felt that was reflected in her talk. You know, at the same conference, there was a very nice talk that we played another time by Terry Gelsing, who's a visual artist. And that's great, too. And it's a different perspective. So it's interesting.
Well, it's nice to be well-rounded.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Bill Thomas, the director of radio covering the North Dakota Governor's Awards for the Arts that happened this past summer. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. And if somebody out there, if you know somebody in the arts in North Dakota that you think deserves some really nice recognition for either a great body of work or for things they do with other people or whatever, you can nominate them to the Arts Council and maybe they'll end up with an award.
Dakota Datebook is next.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
The exacting skills of Polynesian mariners.
They really were amazing navigators. They weren't sailing blind.
The legendary sites of the ancient Greeks.
It's a place where the world touches the underworld.
And the pleasures of traveling in Greece today.
Start with an ouzo, with a little ice and some water and a little feta cheese and some olives.
It's all on the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for January 15th. When people think of downhill skiing, North Dakota doesn't come readily to mind. But people have found some good areas for it. Starting back in the 1960s, a group of local business people around Mandan decided to start a ski area 16 miles south of the city. Unfortunately, the Twilight Hills venture proved short-lived, and the location closed a few years later. However, the first failed attempt helped lay the groundwork for the future. Some 30 years later, Jim and Jan Beck, on a skiing trip to Botno, thought it was a shame the closest place to ski was 3 hours away. Jim owned Jim Beck Construction, and he had recently opened a tourist railway from Mandan to Fort Abraham Lincoln State Park, the Fort Lincoln Trolley Company. He also knew of the earlier Twilight Hills attempt and thought it was worth another shot. He formed a group of investors, and on August 15, 1992, the landowner of the old ski area granted them a lease. They started work with the goal of opening by Christmas, but this was harder than they thought. The old Twilight Hills site had some concrete footings and wire in the grass that made mowing a pain. After they managed to cut some runs, they began working on their first lift, the Blue Chair, a machine that came from the Holomont ski area by Buffalo, New York. It was disassembled and shipped by truck to the newly named Huff Hill ski area. As the crew began reassembling the lift, the temperature dropped, got even colder as they installed snowmaking equipment and cleared trails. Cold weather and snowstorms stalled the team so much that they missed the Christmas deadline. Jim Beck was worried, saying, "We knew how important it was to be open by Christmas. It would make or break a season. When we missed it, that put us behind for a long time." On this date, in 1993, the ski area finally opened. And luckily, a long winter gave them time to recover. Today, Huff Hills continue to be popular, even offering accessible skis for people with disabilities. The ski area provides a closer-to-home opportunity for the folks of Central North Dakota. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Lucid Thomas. Filling in for Merrill Pepcorn, I'm Bill Thomas.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
In the years leading up to menopause, many women struggle.
I just did not have the energy to do the things that I wanted to do.
And for those with a history of depression and anxiety, the transition can be harder.
And doctors are not keeping up with that.
Why finding help can be challenging. We'll also hear about the role impeachment managers will play during the Senate trial on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
That's it for this Wednesday edition of Main Street. Coming up tomorrow on the show, vaping is leading to a number of severe complications and even deaths across the country, and that number is on the rise. We learn more from Melissa Markegaard with the Fargo Cass Public Health Clinic. She is a tobacco prevention coordinator, and she joins John Harris for Prairie Pulse. That's coming up tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.